Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Got Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen,
with Chris Clark.
The 2007 South Carolina class was, at that time, sixth in the country and fourth in the SEC, which is amazing.
Wes Mitchell.
You know, I think if you're South Carolina, you're aiming to at least be at 50%. Then in theory, you're adding talent, you're getting better, you're putting yourself in a position to compete.
And Tyler Head.
It's been a great week for South Carolina. On the recruiting front, still certainly plenty to talk about.
On the home of the Gamecocks,
107.5
The Game.
And welcome into the Gamecocks Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler, West, and Chris along with you on this Tuesday morning. Thank you once again to our special guests for the Garnet Trust Hour, McGee Moody, Jay Brown, Jeremy Smith, and Rebecca Lorick. I want to go back to the conversation we were having at the end of the last hour with Coach and Jay. You know, we're approaching 2 years of NIL being a thing, and all we talk about is the money that these guys are getting, and you know, you brought up the $13 million that Jaden Rashada was promised and all that stuff, but I don't think anybody really thinks about it on the back end from the financial responsibility that's being placed on 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, and something as simple as taxes that a lot of us didn't really know anything about until we got our first paycheck and had to, you know, fill out a W-2 the next year or whatever. Like, that's such an interesting perspective that Coach and Jay were able to bring on, you know, trying to hold these guys and girls financially responsible so they don't make mistakes and they can have this money for the long term.
Well, and when I got my first pay stub, I think I was 14, working at a place in the upstate, making hot dogs. That was my first job. I got my pay stub. Well, they take taxes out automatically.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't really think about it. Sure. I probably had to learn, well, you have to file your taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just sit there. But, I mean, literally, the vast majority, if not all, of these NIL dollars are coming in a 1099 format. And
right.
So some athletes literally, well, what is 1099? What's self-employment? They don't understand that you're basically paying double.
Right.
They don't understand that you need to withhold those taxes. So it's really cool, I think, that here in Columbia, kind of in the local, if you want to, you know, classify it that way, the localized NIL market, which has been the biggest driving force overall in NIL.
Sure.
Yeah, there's big brand deals from these big brands, but a lot of it is localized, like, quote-unquote, collective dollars. You know, it's a lot of these places don't have full, like, programs. And so when you look at Garnet Trust and what Jeremy Smith's doing with them, yes, they have the media and the events, sponsored content, but they also have the foundation that gives the charitable piece, like what Spencer's doing with Rebecca Lorick, Pathways to Healing. And then you also have their partnership with Cornerstone, Jay McGee, that's giving these athletes access to financial resources that are so critical.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at this situation too, like when I was 18, shoot, man, when I was 25, I don't know if I knew what I needed to know about taxes. And I probably still, I'm actually in the process of about to do my taxes, and I still don't know everything that has to do with it. So I think really the part of athletics, and this goes beyond NIL, I think, but the part of athletics that kind of goes beyond athletics is that it teaches you, and this is a cliche, but it's very true. It teaches you about a lot of life situations that people otherwise would not be exposed to at that age. Everything from managing your time to knowing how to deal with adversity to knowing how to deal with success to, in this case now, the financial aspect. And it's actually real world experience on the financial side. I know it's always been common for football teams and other programs to bring in speakers and people to talk about life skills and stuff like that. But, you know, if I'm 18, 19, 20 years old, I'm probably letting some of that go in one ear and out the other. If I'm actually getting money in my wallet and it is affecting me, and now I'm trying to figure out, all right, hey, I made $10,000. but then somebody's telling me, actually, you really made more like $8,000 because the government wants their part of it, then I'm going to be like, okay, this directly affects me. I need to understand, why does it work like that? And what can I do to maybe lower my tax burden as well? So I think the big deal here, especially young people, but really all people, we learn more from experience and things that directly affect us as opposed to other people's experiences. So this provides real world experience.
And I think that same thing that you said, Wes, directly correlates to the fact that, I mean, the part of the reason people don't like NIL is because they don't understand it and it's not an experience they live. So they forget that, you know, athletes are now learning about some of these things younger. There's good and bad things to everything. I mean, it's great, for example, that we have, you know, a free market, the ability to invest money. Well, on the other side of that, you got Bernie Madoff. You know, so like there's good and bad to every single situation that you could, you know, that you could possibly think of.
Well, and I thought it's also good from the perspective of what Coach and Jay were able to provide there. Is Jay, former student athlete himself, Coach, obviously a former coach at this level, where they kind of know from Jay's perspective what questions he would have had if he was a college student when NIL was around, and from Coach's perspective, what he would want his student athletes to know or be taught in regards to the money that they're making. So they have good perspectives, having been there before themselves, not obviously in an NIL environment at that point in time, but knowing what questions need to be asked and what people need to know.
Yeah, for sure. And so if you want to go back and listen to that full interview, Tyler will have it up on the 1075thegame.com podcast page later, so you can check that out. We had, again, Rebecca Lorick and Spencer Rattler, Rebecca from pathwaystohealing.com. She's talking about an event that she's putting together, their Walk a Mile event over at the State House on April the 1st. Spencer Rattler joined us to talk about that for a few minutes. They're, of course, locked in the midst of spring practice. And then McGee Moody, former swim and diving coach here at South Carolina, and Jay Brown, former team captain on the 2010 national title team. And speaking of spring practice,
yep,
I guess we're going to play some more audio today. Now, Tyler, what is the, we have players.
Yes.
Not coaches.
Yes.
Do we have a wheel? Have you built a wheel?
I have built a wheel for the players as well. So yesterday we heard from Juju McDowell, Luke Doty, Ja'Kai Moore, Xavier Leggett, De'Carrion Joyner, Juice Wells, and I believe that was it. Yeah, that was it that we heard from yesterday. But yes, I have a wheel for the players as well.
And I said we didn't have coaches, but we do.
We have one specific, cut for coach. I think we'll save that until the top of the hour, because that's going to be a fun segment there. We are also going to hear from Coach Beamer at 12:30 today for his second spring practice press conference. We'll actually be carrying that live on Jay and Terry's show, the halftime show, as we'll learn about what he's seen and what's going on as they've embarked on what I guess today would be the fourth practice of spring so far.
Fourth practice. So plenty going on, plenty to dive into, and we'll hear more from the players later and kind of discuss some of those things. Real quick, Wes, I want to get your take on this one. Pretty close to the situation. Josiah Thompson out of Dillon. Quick recruiting note for everyone. Dillon four-star offensive tackle Josiah Thompson, who's actually ranked individually. Again, housekeeping note, On3 has their industry ranking, which is an average of all four major services. But On3 itself, its individual rankings, has him as the number 19 overall prospect in the country. So five-star type player right here. Mm-hmm. He has set an announcement date, Wes, so tell us when that is and what that may mean for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, and with that ranking, as they expand the five stars, that would actually put him firmly in the five-star range. So could be a future five-star guy for South Carolina if they are able to land him on April 11th, 9 a.m. And, you know, this is someone, I don't think it's a surprise out there, Chris. We've said South Carolina's been in great shape, I mean, for weeks, for months, really, maybe for a year at this point. He's one of these guys that would be in that competition with, I don't know, Montague Rames last year, Zay McLeod. Let's see, there's probably several guys, Mazio Bennett, that have just been on campus, I mean, literally countless times.
Cam Pringle.
Yeah, Cam Pringle is up there. You know, I really do wonder between Cam and Josiah who's been there more. They really probably couldn't tell you how many times they've been there because they've just been on campus so many times. It doesn't even count as an unofficial visit anymore, I feel like. They just show up. But all that being said, he put out his top five. But, I think Carolina fans should feel really, really comfortable with where they are on this one. And just continuing, I mean, I thought last class was the best O-line class in school history, of course, you know, on paper. But this one very quickly, especially just the upside of this one, that you look, you're talking about tackles that are two of the top, conservatively, two of the top five offensive tackles in the country if South Carolina can land Josiah. Then you got Blake Franks, who I think is more of a guard target. But, man, I mean, they have just wrecked shop on O-line recruiting. So, could get another one April 11th with Josiah Thompson making his decision official then.
And not only two really highly ranked guys, but two in-state guys that would mean. And that's after landing Marquis Anderson last year from Dorman, a program that, and there's a variety of reasons behind this. Some of it's just been South Carolina hasn't pursued the kids sometimes from there. Sometimes they just don't land the kids, but they haven't. Dorman has not been a feeder program to the University of South Carolina. Go in there and you get a Marquis Anderson, a kid from Dorman, close to Clemson, who had a Clemson offer. They pursued him hard, and they were able to land him. You go and get Pringle, same thing. Clemson wanted him. A bunch of other programs wanted him, and Thompson would be the same thing. Then you look, Wes, at another guy who's considered deciding early and has held off so far, Blake Franks from Greenville, another Clemson-Carolina battle, and of course he has other offers too. If you land those four in-state guys in the span of two cycles, not only are you bringing in more talent, but it kind of, perception-wise, you're beating Clemson, you're beating a lot of programs. We've seen a lot of actually in-state offensive linemen, USC either miss and they go to Clemson, or they go out of state.
Mm-hmm.
And so this I think, would be huge from a perception standpoint and the types of players you're landing.
Well, you know, you're talking about if you go ahead and add Josiah in there, that's three for three among the top three prospects in the state of South Carolina. So you're talking about basically being in a situation where you're sweeping the top three. And, you know, man, you want to start to there's kind of consensus on who the top three are. Now, there may be some arguments on the order, but you get past the three and there's a little bit more differing opinions out there. But of the guys South Carolina has offered, you have those three. Then, you know, you have Blake Franks. Then you have Kelvin Hunter. And, you know, those are kind of the primary, I don't think I forget anybody, that's the primary five guys right now they've been focused on for 2024. So you could conceivably sweep your five in-state offers. And, you know, there's some guys in there, maybe South Carolina is after Hunter and Clemson isn't. Maybe there's a receiver from, I guess, the Aiken area that...
Brace Staley.
Yeah, Clemson's after him, South Carolina's not. So there's a couple of guys where there's differing opinions, but of your five targets, you could conceivably go 5 of 5, which I don't know if that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, you even look at, like, even when South Carolina was doing really well in state, you know, look at the 2009, 10, 11 classes. They didn't get everybody. I mean, I'm thinking of 2010 specifically. You signed Marcus Lattimore and A.J. Cannon in that class. DeAndre Hopkins, you didn't get him. You didn't get John Fulton from Manning, who went to Bama. You didn't get the kids from Burns, Brandon Willis and Corey Miller. So, I mean, and they pursued all those guys. So, to get everybody you pursued in a class, I think really speaks to how they've leveled up the recruiting for the 2024 class.
We'll spin the wheel of player audio up next on the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs right here on 107.5 The Game.
It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen with Chris Clark, Wes Mitchell, and Tyler Head on your home of the Gamecocks, 107.5 The Game.
And welcome back into the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler West and Chris along with you on this Tuesday. It's time to spin the wheel of player audio as several players met with the media yesterday ahead of another spring practice today. Again, we'll hear from Shane Beamer later on today at 12:30. You can listen to that live on Jay and Terry's halftime show. Let's spin the wheel of audio and see what we come up with.
This year around, you know, it's actually like, all right, you know, the league is the next step, you know, so I'm just trying to find new ways, you know, make some staying healthy throughout the season, making sure I got that little voice in the back of my head, like, you know, keep going, you know, because this is my last year, you know, but it's kind of the same mentality, you know, just that dog mentality, you know, play like you're the best man on the field and act like that on and off the field. And just, you know, treat this last year, you know, like a professional, because next year I will be a professional.
And that was Juice Wells talking about his mindset going into 2023. And, you know, he comes in last year after playing at James Madison, putting up monster numbers there. And he kind of alluded to it. You know, there was a part of him that thought he was going to be here for 1 year, then jumped to the NFL and maybe didn't quite have the performance that he wanted to. Did have 400-yard games last year, three of those coming in the last four games of the regular season. So certainly ended 2022 on a high note. But he's going to be looked at as the top guy going into 2023, and like you said, one more year at South Carolina, then his goal is to be in the NFL in 2024.
Yeah, Juice highly considered going ahead and making the jump, but I think made a good decision to come back. He's now a known commodity. He's going to be one of the best returning guys in the SEC. I think that will help his draft stock as far as just having a number of scouts and teams with their eyes on him now and just kind of knowing what he's all about. And I think much like what we talked about with Spencer Rattler, Chris, he, I believe, has taken on much more of a leadership role within this team. And it's very hard when you're coming in and you're trying to get settled yourself. And, you know, how are you going to tell somebody else what to do if you're brand new on campus? So, you know, this time last year, Juice was just trying to earn his spot and trying to get settled in. Whereas now he's been there a full year. He's really showed what he can do on the field. He leads by example, I think, in the way he attacks practice and attacks, obviously, the ball in the air as well on the game field. So, you know, I think he's set up for a great situation with both he and Spencer Rattler coming back. And I think you're going to hear more and more about how he has taken over a little bit more of a leadership role in that receiver room.
And when you just talk to other players around the program, hear them talk, you talk to people inside the program, I mean, you kind of ask even through, again, spring practice number four is literally – probably just wrapped up or still, you know, taking place right now over there. They're going to mention Juice Wells, you know, kind of, hey, who's standing out? Who's leading by example? Juice Wells. Dakarion Joyner said it yesterday. Hey, what guys are standing out? And he kind of asked to follow up, and he said Juice Wells. So there's, you know, last season there was a question as to who's the number one receiver on this team? Who's going to lead this team in receptions? Who's going to be kind of the guy, the alpha dog? There's no doubt this year that it's Juice Wells. And not only is that just in the receiver room, but really just offense in general, you can kind of pick and choose a few guys that you think are going to be leaders on this offense. And Juice is number one, 1A, 2 at worst, probably. He's way up there.
As I mentioned, you know, he ended the season on a strong note with three of his 400-yard games coming in those last four games of the regular season. He had four touchdowns between those games as well. So there's something to be said about the connection that he and Spencer Rattler seemed to have there at the end of the season, the momentum they carried into the end of the year and going into spring practice this year.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that just having an entire offseason knowing who the guy is, and, you know, obviously he and Spencer worked really hard last offseason, but there's no substitute, I think, for on-field, in-game, you know, success and just kind of building that rapport with each other. So I think that for them, I'm very curious. I know fans are excited to see what they have in store for an encore. So let's go back out to our unofficial integrated media will of media.
I mean, he just every day he comes in and just puts his head down and works, whether that be coming in early to get extra, you know, extra reps in the film room, or, you know, coming back up, you know, after practice during the evenings with me and going through it. Just his willingness to, you know, kind of do the extra things and the things that, you know, people don't really see. You know, that's kind of what stood out to me and kind of reminded me of myself when I came in. Just the drive that he had or that he has to just to learn, to get better, and to do the things out there on the field that are going to set him apart. That stood out to me, and I'm extremely proud of him and, you know, all that he's done so far since he's got here. And he's just going to continue to get better, and I'm going to do everything I can to help him do that as well.
That was Gamecock quarterback Luke Doty actually talking about Lenoris Sellers and the progress that he's seen out of him so far through spring practice. And obviously, we know Spencer Rattler coming back this year. He's going to be the starter come fall, assuming that he stays healthy throughout the entire season. Luke Doty's obviously been around here for a long time. And, you know, kind of seems like maybe that next in line guy once Rattler does move on. But it's such a crowded quarterback room, and perhaps there's nobody that's getting talked about more than Lenora Sellers with all of his hype coming in. And from what Luke Doty said right there, it sounds like he's off to a good start.
Yeah, that being fan favorite and all-around great guy, Lucas Doty, also Garnet Trust, our guy as well here recently. Luke actually echoing many of the same things that Dow Loggins said about Lenora Sellers, I guess that would have been last week, and just that he is a first to arrive, last to leave type guy. I think you look at the way Luke carries himself, there's certainly amount of respect for another guy who does the same. And Lenoris, I mean, it's very, very early, but all signs are that this guy has, I mean, I think a brilliant future at South Carolina and will be in a position to, you know, down the line. Luckily, he's not in the situation Luke was when he first got here, where there was a lot of pressure to go play. And, you know, Luke obviously ended up playing as a true freshman and then playing banged up as a true sophomore. But for Lenoris, you have an opportunity to learn behind some really good guys and some really good players. And I think that will be very beneficial for him in the long run. But Lenoris himself, it feels like he's just come in and attacked it as if he was a guy who maybe has a chance to play.
Yeah, and not surprising based on what we know about him. Not a very demonstrative guy. On the field he is, you know, but he's not going to be loud, brash. He's just going to kind of let his play do the talking. And, you know, this is one, Wes, where you've got a guy with immense physical gifts, whether that's just his size and his athleticism and his arm talent, all that stuff wrapped up in one package. But, you know, we talk about guys all the time in recruiting or even guys that end up on college rosters. And it's kind of, man, this kid is so talented, but can he ever put it together? And you don't really worry about that with Lenoris. You don't worry about the off-field. You feel like he's got a really good chance to very quickly and very efficiently, you know, tap into that immense potential that he has. And he doesn't have to do it yet. I mean, we've gone through the Luke Doty story many times. He's bouncing back and forth as a true freshman. And, you know, now it's, hey, your first start on a team that ends up winning two games is going to be against Georgia. Good luck. You know, you don't have that this year for Lenoris, so he'll have an opportunity to develop. But all the returns we've gotten behind the scenes have been that he's doing some really, really good things. Tyler, we're going to fire up the wheel again?
Yeah, we're going to hit a break really quick, come back, and keep a fire in the wheel. Got a few more bites we can get to as the Game Trucks Cox Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs rolls on 107.5 The Game. And welcome back into the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler West and Chris along with you. Before we give the Wheel of Audio another spin, it's Tuesday. It means there's a sub of the day waiting for you at Firehouse Subs, and I believe today's sub of the day is my new favorite.
Turkey, bacon, ranch, two of my three favorite things on the planet. One of the best subs of the day, in my opinion. I like several of them, but anything, Chris, involving bacon and ranch, I am here for. And you can be here for it as well. That's the sub of the day, $7.99. Go on there, hit firehousesubs.com, hit that rapid rescue. You can actually, you know what, it's 11:36. Order that thing right now to be ready, depending on timing, in about 15, 20 minutes. You can go pick it up. That will make your lunch a little bit more efficient. Maybe you can spend a little bit more time listening to the show. Maybe you can go spend a little more time reading GameCockCentral.com. By far, the best way to order from Firehouse Subs, in my opinion. But again, Turkey Bacon Ranch, our Tuesday sub of the day, and FirehouseSubs.com is how you can get it.
All right, time to spin the Wheel of Audio one more time.
Jalen Brooks and Josh Van leaving, man. I got to play a big part in this offense. And I feel like I always say, I feel like I can do a lot of things within this offense. What Coach Loggins is bringing, man, I like it.
Sorry. You're good. And that was Xavier Leggett with one of the most unique voices on the entire team. Certainly no when he's speaking, talking about his expanded role for this upcoming season, specifically in Dow Loggins' new offense. And, you know, his production was kind of here and there as the season went along, but had the huge bowl game with 78 yards and the two touchdowns there. So after, you know, Juice Wells, you're going to be looking at him as somebody that you're going to be relying on quite a bit from a receiving standpoint this fall.
Xavier is one of those guys. I mentioned players earlier that you're like, if he can put it together. And I kind of gave that a more negative slant. I kind of, with that, meant a little bit more off field. With Xavier, it's not that. You know, it's just for him about being more consistent on the field. And so you can even look at last year as kind of a microcosm for that. Like, you look at the SC State game, right? With the two very notable drop passes, have one get picked off his hands. But then you think about Texas A&M, 100-yard kick return with one shoe for about half of it to open the game against the Aggies in a win. You think about the Notre Dame contest where you have that one of the best catches I've ever seen, certainly in person, where you barely get the 1 foot down and haul in a ball on a dead sprint to the corner of the end zone. Those are the types of things athletically that Xavier can do. And, Wes, you and I always talk about how, like, if you've never seen Xavier Leggett in person, you see him and you're always like, goodness gracious, he is a big dude.
I mean, he looks like an NFL player. Yeah. Like, when you, and he always has, honestly. And, you know, I thought, and something we're going to see, I would imagine, a ton of this year, I thought the ability to get him the ball in space in the running game as well, and some of the jet sweep and sort of end around type stuff that they were doing last year, I thought that really fit his skill set as well. And, you know, to bounce back from the two drops, there were some people, I would say, that did kind of just give up on him, I feel like, after the two drops at SC State. But guess what? If you're playing a sport, if you're out there, you got hundreds of thousands of eyes on you. Sometimes you're going to make mistakes. People are going to, you know, bash on you a little bit. Like, that's kind of the man in the arena type thing. Like, you're putting yourself out there. You're going to make some mistakes. He bounced back and, you know, I think really had some nice moments overall last year and should set up. I mean, you look, depending on, I think, what Eddie Lewis does, that's the guy Leggett probably has to worry most about as far as fighting for playing time. But right now, especially as much running back as the Kerryon Joyner is playing, it sure feels like you'd probably have Juice Wells as one of your outside receivers, Leggett as your other, and then Amarion Brown as your slot guy. So I would imagine lots of playing time ahead as long as Leggett can continue to move forward and, as you said, be more consistent.
You ready for another spin?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Oh, that's my guy. Very team player oriented. Like I mentioned to someone earlier before, it's rare that you see a guy like that, especially in his position, with as much patience as he presents with the team and the offensive core when it comes to getting everything handled and getting everything in check, knowing that he hasn't been here long and he's earning our trust as well as we're doing the same for him. But like I mentioned, patience has been a big key for him. And I feel like he's taking advantage of every player out there on the field and using our assets to the best of the team.
That's running back Juju McDowell talking about new offensive coordinator Dow Loggins. And now that we've heard from a good handful of these players over the past couple weeks, it's not even a trend at this point. It's just the common narrative that all these guys really love Dow Loggins, not only as an offensive coordinator, but as a person. I mean, he said right there, that's my guy. They all love what he's bringing to the table, not only from a football standpoint, but from a personal standpoint. And everybody seems to be excited about the direction this offense is moving going into 23.
Well, I think he's a football guy, man. I mean, this is a guy that played QB, probably fits in the locker room, probably a guy that, you know, seems to have a personality about him, likes to bust some, you know, what's in the locker room and just kind of be one of the guys. So I think that's maybe a little bit different fit than before, and just a likable guy. Now, ultimately, we're all going to, you know, judge him on the play calling. But I think so far, so good as far as this offense and getting it implemented, and the guys seem to be buying in. And, you know, they obviously have some players to replace, but they've returned a nice list of players as well who have done it, who have played in multiple systems, who understand the ins and outs of playing ball and really understand how to learn a new scheme too. And I think you're probably seeing it be a little bit easier transition because Loggins has such a diverse background as well, and just being willing to take on a little bit of the learning himself as opposed to asking the entire team to do so.
And I think when you look at Loggins' offense, or you can even kind of zoom out from that and just make it bigger, big picture, you know, what was the next offensive coordinator's biggest job at South Carolina, or the most immediate thing that they needed to do, that he needed to do? And to me, it was just look at what happened in the last couple games of the regular season last year and try to somehow harness that, right? Some of the guys are different. You know, Josh Van, Jalen Brooks aren't with the team. Marshawn Lloyd's not with the team. There's some offensive linemen you lost, tight ends. Jaheim Bell's not with the team. There's a lot of differences, right, with some players, but there are some key guys coming back with Rattler, Wells, Leggett, a lot of these guys. And so you look at the Tennessee game and the Clemson game, well, why did that work? Well, they scaled things back. They played with some tempo when they needed to. It just looked, a lot of the plays were the same, but it just looked completely different how it was administered. And so from what we've heard, not only do the players really like Loggins, but it seems like he's really made an effort to come in and go, hey, what do we have? Let's see what we have. Let's see what we did well last year and keep that and tweak it as it needs to be. Add some things in there. Let's take what didn't work for whatever reason, find out the reason, and then scrap that reason. And it does seem like there's been a lot of that in the early going for Dowell Loggins through a few spring practices.
Up next, we teased it at the start of the show. Shane Beamer made a mention yesterday about throwing hands with other SEC coaches. We'll dive into that next on the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs on 107.5 The Game.
It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen, with Chris Clark, Wes Mitchell, and Tyler Head on your home of the Gamecocks, 107.5 The Game.
And welcome back into the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs here on 107.5 The Game. Let's hear from Shane Beamer in just a second. But first, we've got a lot of new cameras in our studio here, and we're working on getting all of our shows live stream where you can see all of our beautiful faces very, very soon while we're talking all things Gamecock sports. And that's thanks to our friends over at Integrated Media.
Well, and they have also unofficially sponsored our Wheel of Audio as well. So thank you, Integrated Media, for that. You can get them to help you out as well, 803-948-8327. And you don't have to have an entire radio studio in your house to use Integrated Media, although I'm sure they could hook you up with one if that's something you wanted to do. Everybody has a podcast now, so maybe you need somebody to help you get that set up. Or maybe, guess what, March Madness is not over yet. And so maybe you want to watch these basketball games and put yourself in a situation where you just have the best home audio, home video. Maybe you want to get a TV hung on the wall. Maybe you want to get... I love, Chris, the people that have that extra speaker that goes to the outside. And then so if you're outside grilling or hanging out or talking, you can still hear what's going on in the game inside. That's my next step. So Integrated Media, I may be calling you at 803-948-8327 to make that happen at my house.
Speaking of podcasts, the Bussin' with the Boys podcast of Barstool Sports made their way through Columbia the other day, and they sat down with Spencer Rattler and Juice Wells, as well as Coach Beamer. Those episodes were uploaded yesterday, and one particular question they asked to Coach Beamer about how he would fare fighting other coaches in the SEC. Here's what Beamer had to say.
There's a few, I'd say, that certainly at times I've definitely would want to fight with. Fight as well. We sit in those head coaches meetings, and we're all competitors, and we're intense, and there's great respect for one another. But there's things that happen outside that room and things like that that you're kind of like,
Saban.
Come on, man. I'm not gonna say a name.
Yeah, that's fair,
but there's a few. And who do I feel like I could take? I don't know. I worked with Sam Pittman at Georgia. I worked with Kirby when I was at Georgia. So I mean, I know both those guys well. I feel like from a quickness standpoint, agility, all that, I could probably take Sam, you know. He may beat me like in a beer drinking contest or something like that, I'm sure. But Sam and I were neighbors at South Carolina, so, and he's a little bit older than me, so I don't know. I mean, neighbors at Georgia, so I don't know. There's a few. I mean, I'm not to toot my own horn, but I stay pretty active, and I try and work out regularly and things
like
that.
You look fantastic.
So, well, I appreciate you saying that.
You look well.
So I really feel like I could hold my own and be okay with all 13 other ones in that room. I mean, there'd be some battles, but you know, there's a few in particular that would be a priority at the top of the list, maybe.
Shane throwing down the gauntlet with Sam Pittman. Now, Sam Pittman's a big guy. That's, yeah, and, you know, Shane Oof. Talked about his agility there, maybe. But I feel like if Pittman grabbed a hold of you, you're going to have a tough time squirming out of there.
I don't even know if he'd have to grab a hold if he got a pole.
Clothesline.
Yeah, a clothesline, a punch. Yeah, what's with the, and all in good fun, Sam Pittman's not. I don't think Sam Pittman's on the list of coaches that Beamer wants to fight. The big difference.
I think he picked Pittman because he knew that he had a good enough relationship with him to, like, just throw it out there.
You know, he basically called him washed up and slow.
Yeah, but you're not picking anyone. You're not going to say the name of anyone you actually have any desire to fight. So that was cool. The real question is, who does he actually, not fight, but who does he actually not like?
Well, and guys, later in that, right after that, I think he went into a little bit more detail and said that he was talking with Emily, his wife, that morning about when they play a team on the schedule, they need to do, you know, this or that next year.
I believe his quote was, yada, yada, yada. We need to do yada, yada, yada.
We need to do
which I believe meant we need to beat them, right?
Yeah, but I think there was a little bit like extra in there, you know?
Need to beat them and
pour it on a little
rub
bit.
Their faces in it?
Yeah.
And okay, so who do you think? And by the way, we haven't, I think this is very important to say, we haven't asked anyone who was talking about.
Yeah, we do literally don't know.
So you can give your opinion and it be just your opinion without it being a situation where you asked and then you couldn't say.
And
you
see
what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We literally don't know, or I don't.
So you're talking about him, you know, if you're up by 20 in the fourth quarter, scoring that extra touchdown, not taking a knee, just kind of pouring it on somebody, that kind of thing?
Yeah, if available.
Late exclamation point touchdown.
Yeah, late exclamation point if possible, if that's out there. Or just, you know, a little added sweetness. All right, who's going first?
Well, I already know who you're going to say, and I think I agree.
Really?
Yeah. Let me say who I think you're going to say, and you tell me if I'm right. I think you're going to say Missouri.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes. See, and a lot of people, when this came out, they're like, it's Josh Heupel, which I don't, is there something I should know about that? Why are people saying Josh Heupel?
Oh, I think there's a little budding rivalry there.
I mean, I get it. All right, Josh Heupel and then Stoops, obviously. Now, they've had...
It's not Stoops because that's too obvious.
It's too obvious. I think he landed his punch. I'm totally with you. I think it's Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri.
Well, also because Missouri has gotten South Carolina the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So that would fall in line with the, you know, oh, we need to, yada, yada, yada. We need to beat them because they've gotten.
Yes.
You know, anybody else? There were a few people mentioning, like, Florida because Napier tried to go get Stepp, you know, and take him for. But I don't think, and you know, Florida, Beamer has split with. Kentucky, South Carolina beat this past year. So I don't think there's necessarily that.
Beamer got his payback on Kentucky.
Yeah.
Big time.
So
that was way better than slugging somebody. Yeah, I think it's Drinkwitz. And here's another one. So maybe a giveaway. Again, we don't know. But he's talking about those coaches' meetings. And you can just see Beamer sitting at the coaches' meeting and a coach saying something. And he and probably some other coaches sitting there grumbling like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And I have heard that, you know, Drinkwitz, I mean, he's kind of funny sometimes in the press conferences. He can be a little prickly, I guess would be a good word.
You're putting together the clues.
Somebody brought up the point in the early game this morning that Drinkwitz has the most punchable face of all the SEC coaches.
I've heard that so many times, too.
Yeah.
He just looks like the kind of guy that you're not supposed to like.
Yeah.
I'm there. That's my official.
No,
Wes,
I'm pretty.
Yours?
Yeah. I'm pretty confident.
And Tyler, you're?
That's what I was going to say, too.
Mystery solved.
Yeah.
It's official. We'll just publish it.
Now,
Wes has a story ready to go.
If you were in the position where you were up on Georgia and you had the opportunity to pour it on, I think he would certainly take advantage of that should you be in that position. Definitely an uphill battle there.
But Kirby, you know, and I don't know if this is, I don't think there's any issues. Now, you know, sometimes you hear, well, these two coaches used to be close and now they're not. I've heard nothing of the sort. I do know when Beamer was an assistant here at Carolina and Kirby was an assistant at Bama, they, I mean, they golfed together. They were pretty close, at least at one time. Now, there's always that competitive spirit, of course. Both of those guys. And shoot, dude, I'll go back to, he mentioned Kirby alongside Pittman. I wouldn't want to fight Kirby either. I feel like he'd be mean.
I feel like he's scrappy.
Scrappy.
Mean. Kirby would be very scrappy. Kirby, you know what? Kirby is the guy that, like, Kirby's not a very big dude at all.
No.
But I feel like Kirby would just go to every, like, he'd be poking your eyeballs out and just going to every. Yeah.
There's no rules when you're fighting him.
Yes.
No, he's a no holds barred. It's a boiler room brawl, Tyler?
Yeah.
How about that reference?
Well, yeah, for sure. What about somebody like Saban? Like, I feel like
Saban's just royalty. Like, you don't...
Yeah. But I feel like he's somebody that, you know, if you squared up to fight with him, he'd just kind of, like, sigh, and then he just, like, got you in a headlock 2 seconds later and you didn't even realize what happened. Like, he's just such a savvy pro.
I feel like Saban would just be like, look at all my rings. I don't need to fight you, and then walk off.
Yeah, he has like a force field around him. You can't even approach him.
Hey, speaking of Saban, how about his comments? Direct? Yeah. Is that a direct shot at Nate Oates?
For sure.
There were some reports that came out from some Bama-centric reporters on
Bama
social
insiders,
media.
Insiders, you could say,
yeah,
maybe?
Bama insiders saying that it was just coincidental. But man, it wouldn't have even made sense. Because, I mean, he kind of went out of his way to say there's no such thing as wrong place at wrong time. That the situation with Tony Mitchell wouldn't have even qualified. That's not like I was at this place and something happened. No, you were, it was a lot more than that. So I feel like it was, but apparently some people around there kind of walking it back a little bit.
Yeah, well, also I got to say, Tyler, I'm a little disappointed we didn't play DeCarrion Joyner's clip.
We can do that tomorrow.
So I did not get a chance to ask the boss if we were okay to play that one. It was a little risky.
Okay.
Go check it out on Collins Twitter. Everybody's seen it.
Yeah. There's
no cussing involved.
Well, see, as the producer and the one that plays the audio, I get in trouble if it's bad.
It was involuntary.
It was hilarious.
It was involuntarily explicit.
So, it was hilarious. I watched DeCarrion Joyner's.
Who asked the question?
Well, I'm not going to say that, but DeCarrion Joyner's reaction was...
Oh, it's classic.
Just because you could see the wheels turning, and then the moment that it like hits him, wow, he's asking like that. Like the phrasing of the question. I watched it. I don't even want to tell y'all how many times, and sat there and just busted out laughing every single time.
You don't have to reveal the person's name. Did the person that asked the question do that on purpose?
Oh, we'll have to ask them that. I don't know. I don't think so.
It just came out the wrong way.
I guess.
I had to hold myself back, Tyler, so we all don't get in trouble.
Okay, that's fair. Yep. Anyways, if you want to check that out, go to Colin Taylor's Twitter, and he has it clipped for you there. And I think DK even quote tweeted it with some laughing emojis. So definitely a lot of good come out of yesterday's press conference. Speaking of press conferences, Shane Beamer coming up at 12:30. We'll have that for you here live on the Halftime Show with Jay and Terry coming up next on 107.5 The Game.